My name is James Ulak. I'm the Deputy Director of the Freer Gallery of Art and the Arthur M. Sackler Gallery. And one of my other functions at this museum is to serve as a curator of Japanese art. Our guest in this interview is the distinguished photographer Hiroshi Sugimoto. Mr. Sugimoto is speaking with us most particularly because in spring of 2006, his exhibition, History of History, will be on display at the Sackler Gallery, concurrent with his retrospective, which will be at the Hirshhorn Museum, also part of the Smithsonian. Good.
So we've known each other over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
Yes.
We first met, if I remember correctly, in your gallery in Soho.
Yes, when I had a gallery in
Soho. You had a gallery in Soho, and I went down there. Right. And I really wasn't aware of your background as a photographer. And I think I told you, you better keep your day job and stick with art. And everything, so that's me as a prophet. So, yeah, we've known each other for a long time. And you've known the Freer for a long time, too.
Yes. Over 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
When Tom Roten was director and Yoshi Shimizu, I became a very good friend of Yoshi. So he invited me to visit this museum. That was end of 70s, early 80s, probably. Maybe it's 81 or 2. And then first time that I came to see this museum, and the Matsushima Byobu that Shimizu pulled this out from the storage.
The great screens by Sotatsu.
Yes.
The waves. Yeah. And what I find interesting, you are internationally known as a great photographer.
Finally now, finally, but not that time.
but you are, and you have international recognition, great exhibitions throughout the world. And if I were someone who didn't know your name and looked at your photographs, I wouldn't know that you were Japanese. In other words, you've adopted an international vocabulary for expressing yourself with the camera. But this wonderful exhibition you've created, History of History, which I take to be kind of an autobiography, goes in a completely different direction. It shows your Japanese roots. When did you begin to be interested as a collector and a connoisseur of things of the past?
Well, actually, even my gallery is started by my wife to begin with.
Yes.
And then we had the small baby, so she couldn't to leave home, so that instead I went to buy the first buying trip. It was 1978, I remember. And then, you know, I was totally untrained, even as a dealer. You know, I didn't have any artistic art history education at all in Japan. I studied the Marxism based the economics. So,
Marxist economics.
Marxist economics. That was my major in Tokyo. So basically, you know, Hegel and Feuerbach and those heavy duty German ideologies. So I was trained basically the Western philosophy in Japan, and then I came to this country, and then I lived in California, and it became. Well, it was a flower children time, maybe same time you were. So many people ask me what's the Zen Buddhism is, and then, you know, am I enlightened or not? So I didn't have an answer. So I quickly catch up what these young people are thinking about, what's the Buddhism is. So I learned a lot in the United States to really catch up the Japanese, very basic Japanese history of religion.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So I was made half made in the United States, half made, American, but the Japanese. So it's similar to the young American who was influenced by Oriental philosophy that time, in the 60s and 70s. So I was kind of self-made. And then that's reflected, that experience reflected to create my art. So it's interrelated, my art and my collection. And then by accident, I just became a dealer. And then when I returned from the first buying trip, that time my gallery was named Minge, so it's basically folk art gallery. Mm-hmm. But the folk art is a very deep roots to the serious, you know, things,
right,
of course. And then the Bunkacho organized the show was shipped to Japan side in 1978, I think.
The Bunkacho is the Japanese Agency for Cultural Affairs.
Right.
That's the official.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then this show came right after coming back from my first purchasing trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I compared it. This is called the tradition of Japanese folk art.
Yes, I remember
that show.
So it's
a Minge.
Yeah.
It's a very, very interesting pieces.
Uh-huh.
And then I was so shocked. Well, this is the real thing, the museum quality. There's so much difference between what I bought and this. So I felt so pity. Well, I didn't buy this quality. Mm-hmm. So next time for sure I will buy this quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of self-discipline. And then I just bought so many books. Every time I go back to Japan, I buy a series of Japanese art books.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many things you have common.
Right.
Yeah, I have that. I have that.
Right.
So without any formal academic art history education,
mm-hmm,
I educated myself.
Hmm.
I think this is a better system to educate someone, that you pay your money and then acquire something. If something wrong, if it's fake, you'll be educated.
You'll be smarter.
Right.
It's expensive tuition, though.
Right.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
That's what the museum curator doesn't get educated.
You mean it's other people's money?
Right.
<We're> spending. The in looking through the materials, the mm-hmm, pre-modern materials that are in History of History,
mm-hmm,
I look at it, I suppose, with a different eye than mm-hmm, a viewer who's not educated in Japanese art. But mm-hmm, I was struck by the way you made selections.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw that show, I wanted to know more about you.
Mm-hmm.
You have some great prehistoric material,
right,
very comically and cleverly displayed. You have great Buddhist material,
mm-hmm,
with a real strong emphasis, strikes me anyway,
mm-hmm,
on the Monju, mm-hmm, Bodhisattva.
Right.
And then textiles, masks.
Mm-hmm.
That combination tells me about a certain taste or combination of
uh-huh,
things.
It's very strange, you know, the collections, you know, you have some particular taste and a particular time of the history,
mm-hmm,
and you really focused on every time. Then just the pieces just appeared in front of you as if, like, I'm here for you to buy me.
That's a great sales line. Yeah, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
And then, you know, Monju figures, you know, especially Gokei Monju,
mm-hmm,
by some reason, it's all just comes up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's because probably the special attention to the Kasuga belief and Kasuga shrine in relation with Kofukuji, mm-hmm, they used to be all together over the history. Now Shinto shrine, Kasuga shrine, and Kofukuji is separated after Meiji Restoration,
right.
But the original it's founded together. It stayed for a long time, many hundred years.
Right. That whole,
mm-hmm,
you raise this matter in when you, mm-hmm, write in the catalog, but probably most people aren't aware that,
mm-hmm,
when Buddhists came to,
uh-huh,
Japan, they made a very concerted effort to,
mm-hmm,
not fight the native,
mm-hmm,
religion, but to meld with
just adapt it
in something called, mm-hmm, Honisuijaku.
Honisuijaku.
So
that's the main interest for me,
mm-hmm,
how Japanese adapt foreign culture. The first big attack wave was whether to accept the Buddhism or not.
I see.
Right? So that's the Shotokutai's time, straightly before.
Right.
And then, well, the Japanese, there's no way to refuse it. It's the same as 19th century when
mm-hmm,
the Americans came with a black ship with gunpowder. You know, the Japan...
Commodore Perry, yeah.
Yeah, threatened to open the country. So there's
exactly.
no way to refuse it. So the first time that the acceptance of the Buddhism, but the Japanese never adopted straightforward, you know, because there was some belief besides the importance or importing the Buddhism as a concept. It's a highly sophisticated system as a religion.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to Japanese belief is based simple nature worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like a roots of the Shintoism.
Right.
So, you know, the issue is how to adapt it. So slowly from like 7th century through 10th century, there's this this mixture of Honjitsujyoku theory mm-hmm. formed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Japan accepted the Buddhism, which means that they imported the skill how to make a sculpture to carve out the Buddha's figure.
Right.
And then after completing this method, technique, then Japanese start making their own sculpture of carving out their original belief of kami, the Shinto
mm-hmm.
god.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So probably the 10th century, the early Heian period, it came to the peak. And then Japan decided, well, we have nothing to run anymore. Let's stop communication between China and Japan. Then this is ours now, the method and technique.
Right.
So this is a very interesting period, how Japanese, you know, highly skilled already, and then no need for more theoretical issues. So let's make art based on the original belief of Shintoism.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like to see the sculpture of that time, like 10th to 12th century,
mm-hmm.
of Shinto sculptures, especially besides the Buddhist figures. So mm-hmm. that became my main target of my collections.
Mm-hmm.
It's half Shinto, half Buddhism. It's just foreign technique adapted to a Japanese spirit.
So that's mm-hmm. that's a code for you describing yourself, right?
Right.
Exactly, which I think is neat. I see you in mm-hmm. in this show in particular as looking both backward and forward.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no inhibitions at all about doing very mm-hmm. wonderful things with early mm-hmm. pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You adapt some of your photographs into reliquaries,
right.
or you take some sculpture and reconfigure mm-hmm. it. I think some people not familiar with some of this work might not even realize that you've done it. But mm-hmm. so you're saying that being Japanese and being an artisan or mm-hmm. an artist is a lot about mm-hmm. being totally open to all resources rather than jumping back to some mm-hmm. pure Japanese-ness.
Pure. Yeah, myself, you know, since I left Japan, and I became more Japanese than being in Japan.
Right.
Yes, because right. many people ask me about the Japanese culture.
Right.
And so I feel strong responsibility to answer and give proper answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, maybe you've spent some time in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I
you are in charge of explaining what the American activity is, why American is invading Vietnam. Or
right. Uh-huh. I've done all that. No, I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
There's a work that you've done that's not in the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this History of History exhibition in Tokyo several uh-huh. years ago, you had a model. That is the Shinto shrine, mm-hmm. The Goi Jinja.
Yes.
In off Shikoku. And
yes.
As you're describing your philosophy and your genesis as an artist, mm-hmm. I think that's the ultimate statement
mm-hmm.
of combining Buddhism
and Shinto.
And then
the skill of, yes.
Can you describe mm-hmm. a little bit what goes on in the shrine, how you got started with the project? And
mm-hmm.
This is a very old, original site.
This is originally trace back the history. This was the first the shrine was founded in the 15th century.
Mm-hmm.
That's the I can trace back
uh-huh.
as far as Muromachi period.
Right.
But even before 15th century, the people was living there, and then this small island floating in the middle of the Seto Inland Sea. The famous Sutoku Emperor was exiled here.
Yes.
This is what that was 11th century battle of Zen Kunen. That's
the 9 years war.
The 9 years war. Yes. And then Hogen Heiji.
Right.
Battles. Well, I'm getting into too detailed history.
but it's an important historical site.
And at the beginning of this famous
Heike Wars between the Taira and the Minamoto. Yes. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the Goshirakawa was the younger brother of Sutoku, Emperor Sutoku.
Yes,
yeah. Yes. So he was exiled here. And then there's just a few hundred meters down the hill, there's the marks of former residence of this Emperor Sutoku was exiled here.
Really?
Stone. Yes.
Well, how does a living artist like you get invited to go in and recreate a historical site?
Mr. Fukutake built a beautiful museum here.
Yes.
Naoshima Contemporary Art Museum, which was designed by Ando Tadao.
Ando Tadao's museum,
yes.
Yeah.
And then the problem of this island is the decreasing of the population, the same as everywhere in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So that this shrine used to be, you know, it's still being worshipped, but the building itself, the last time it was rebuilt at like early Meiji period,
yeah.
And then not enough community to support this shrine anymore, so it's just left almost abandoned, the structure itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Fukutake came up this idea to revive the community, local community. So there's so many beautiful, abandoned old houses. So he started, you know, collecting or buying the houses to give it to the artist to refurbish or rebuild the house. So James Tarell did one job. And then Tatsuo Miyajima, Japanese artist, did one. And Rei Naito, another artist, was given one old 18th century house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was nominated to rebuild this shrine.
Wow.
Yes.
What a privilege. That's a privilege, I would think.
Without having no experience as an architect.
Right.
It's very brave for him to let me do it. But I was presenting some other architectural idea to build a no theater within the island. So mm-hmm. I made models and presented to him. So he knew that I'm interested in building in architecture. So this I think this is perfect for me. The linking, you know, thinking about the ancient time of the Shinto belief, and then recreating the style that I imagined what it should be. In mm-hmm. ancient time. So this is the most earliest Ise style shrine I studied. And then even made an underground chamber.
The most striking thing for me mm-hmm. in looking at this, I sorry to say, I haven't actually visited the site mm-hmm. yet. I plan to, but at first glance, it looks like a very well-kept mm-hmm. shrine.
Right.
When you look closely, you mm-hmm. look at the steps leading up to the shrine, and they're all large chunks of optical glass, is that correct?
It's a pure optical quality glass.
So this is the photographer?
Yeah, this is a connection of my photography, photographer's attitude. And this is what Nikons and Canon, they all buy this block of the glass.
That's what they work for.
Yeah, carve out the lens.
So the stairs leading up to the shrine are mm-hmm. translucent there?
Yes.
And then it's
continuously running down to the underground chamber.
It goes to an underground chamber. Now, correct me if I've mm-hmm. misunderstood, but you actually had a huge piece of mm-hmm. granite moved
yes.
to create the underground chamber?
Yes. So this is one piece of, it's weighted 24 tons.
Yeah.
And then I think the earliest stage of the Shinto belief is not the structure or shrine itself. It's just more like a huge tree or one big piece of stone.
Some beautiful natural thing.
Natural formation, beautiful right. things. That's supposed to have a spiritual power that people
right.
found out some kind of a special spiritual power around these nature formations. So sometimes it's one big piece of stones. Mm-hmm. You can still find this kind of religion or belief in the deep Shinto mountains. You can always have these marks of this holy tied, you know, roped area.
So the thing is roped off by this thick rope that indicates that it's sacred.
That indicates, mm-hmm. right.
Huh.
So I wanted to create this kind of space. So uh-huh. I found this 24 tons of rock, not within the island, but that's across the ocean, Seto Inland Sea, near Okayama.
Mm-hmm.
So the big job was to bring this piece of stone to be placed here.
Mm-hmm.
We investigated many methods, like self-defense forces, huge helicopter. We can almost hire to lift up 24 tons and place it here, but we couldn't get the approval to fly over the city of Okayama.
that would be one of the best uses from the military budget I could think of, actually. And then these lead down into the chamber, an underground chamber?
Yes, so I dig out the chamber first.
Yeah,
and then this is the cap. It's like a
the top.
Mm-hmm. So that you can see it from both sides, upper part, and then you know from inside. So this actually from here, and then there's one big piece.
Uh-huh.
So this is the entrance way with having another piece of old stones.
Uh-huh.
But actually, this is part of the bottom part of this 24 tons of rock.
And you enter into this chamber, and mm-hmm. the most stunning thing about it, mm-hmm. as you go down optical glass steps,
mm-hmm.
and you're suddenly presented with a vision of mm-hmm. the sea.
Yes. This is the way out.
The way out.
This is the way out.
That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's like looking at one of your photographs.
Yes. So this is, in this case, nothing for sale. It's actually, it's a real sea. You can see it.
It's what you call borrowed scenery, right?
Exactly the same composition as my style of photograph. So it's a borrowed landscape. The photography is basically it's a borrowed landscape.
That's
right. You steal the images from the reality. Mm. So I'm tired of faking up the reality. So I wanted to represent the real sea. So as if the ancient people is looking at the sea, you as a contemporary person can still see the way that Kofun period people may look at the sea this way.
How did Japanese mm-hmm. audiences and/or critics react to this dimension of your expression?
Well, not so many people react.
They don't react. They don't like it, or they just don't react.
Well, they just don't know how to react. Very few people reacting now.
Mm-hmm.
It's slowly getting known. So it's, you never know. It's a so remote island, and there's a group of architect. You know, so start reacting a little bit slowly, very slowly.
But even beyond the specific architectural project mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. when you look at the smaller self-contained pieces that you've done, for example, mm-hmm. The early 20th century silver cosmetic box.
Tiffany 20s, maybe.
With two images, one of the former emperor, the Showa
Hirohito.
Emperor,
Hirohito in there.
And the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's very ironic to me. And I found this in the ladies' compact cases in a small antique shop in New York. And it's designed maybe late 20s or 30s, Art Deco style, with rising sun.
The rising
sun
impression.
That's clearly Japanese symbol.
Right,
and this is the relations between the United States and Japan is getting bad that time already.
Yes,
but as a symbol, as an art deco, it's been used many years, very popular, and it's a solid silver and Tiffany. So I found it's very interesting to place as a Japanese symbol as a Japanese emperor Hirohito can be placed inside as a powder section, and then it comes with a puff. And then I wanted to place the seascapes images Sea of Japan comes first, and then deeper section, the Emperor Hirohito.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So this is the Marxist-trained economist playing with images.
Well, yes, it's a combination of the images. It makes some sense. Mm-hmm. And then there's a famous Shinkokin Wakashu from the Gotoba Emperor when he was exiled to Island Oki. And then
This is an anthology of poems brought together by an emperor. Right.
And then the Shinkokin was commissioned by Emperor Gotoba.
Yes.
And then Gotoba himself lost his power against Minamoto Grand, Hojo Grand's. And then he was exiled to island of Oki. Mm-hmm. This is where I photographed the seascape from island of Oki. Mm-hmm. And 我こそは虹守りよ沖の海の荒き波風心して吹け. This is a poetry.
The poem, yes.
You have to translate.
I will translate. Yeah. I will find another moment to translate or refer to someone who's more adept.
Yeah. So he's ordering the sea of Japan to be controlled under my regime. That even though he lost his power, he was exiled. He's announcing that I'm the king of this island. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of spirit of the emperor. And then I wanted to see this particular sea of Japan. And I tried to find exactly this is the spot where emperor stood and read this poem against, looking at the sea of Japan. And it seems like, I figured, this must be spot. So I photographed it instead of Emperor Gotoba. And then, so this is direct ancestor of Gotoba, that Emperor Showa is here, cased under this memory of lost power of this Emperor Gotoba. It's particularly, he is the guy, Showa Tendo is also lost his power against the United States, and being cased with American-designed pre-war compact case with Japanese motif. So it's very many layers of meaning.
Well, no, this is the kind of thing that I just find fascinating and exciting. Uh-huh. It's so characteristic of the best of Japanese art that it's multi-layered, mm-hmm. many internal references. Mm-hmm. Yet when this show is exhibited, there are no labels, simply a brief identification label. How can an audience untrained in these things appreciate, even a Japanese audience? I suspect many Japanese don't know this.
No, don't know this.
Do you think it's important that people know the background?
I can explain it. When maybe I have to write a short text for this, maybe.
But if the object, when I look at it, is extremely appealing.
Yeah, object itself has to have its some kind of power, generating power. Yeah. So even without my expression, it has to be visually interesting.
Exactly.
As an art object, it should have its own power. So sometimes the explanation may change the object, understandable object. So sometimes it's better to be leave alone to receive this generated power from the object.
That's, to me, a very succinct and good explanation for less is more.
Less is more. Sometimes, like a seascapes, I have this title's name. This is the Caribbean Sea, Jamaica. People, wondering and keep looking at the seascapes and then keep enjoying the scenes without understanding where this place was. But some people just start reading the label. Well, this is Jamaica, 1980. Then it's time to move to the next,
Right.
So it's just confirming something. The reading label make people think, well, this is it. I understood. But that's not true. Just being thrown out to kind of unidentified or unknown scene, something visually interesting. That's enough.
I like what you're saying about this. Mm-hmm. There's somewhere I read that it was a nice phrase, and I won't capture it exactly, but words are our defense against chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think oftentimes in museums, mm-hmm. people pile up words around mm-hmm. objects that
right.
try to subdue their power. They're not
mm-hmm.
ready to face them directly.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about your ensemble, mm-hmm. your autobiographical ensemble, mm-hmm. is that it speaks for itself.
I think so.
Without a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote a text explanation, a text
right.
for each object,
right.
which is very unlikely academic.
Very.
It's a very different style that you can write about the object.
Sure.
You can write so differently.
No, you write in a very personalized way.
Explanation, mm-hmm. how I encounter this particular object.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were working for the museum as a curator, then I have to think about the general audience and the public to mm-hmm. make American people to understand what the Japanese culture was in mm-hmm. the 12th century. But in my case, this is a very personal experience, so I don't care. This is just my personal experience.
That makes show
different. You have to have a Hokusai show, then you have to have a general idea of Hokusai. You have to give it to the public people. In my case, this is my very limited, discriminated in some way, collection.
There's that popular movie a few years ago, Lost in Translation. I think we should make another one called Lost in Explanation, where we burden the mm-hmm. piece with so much explanation that we mm-hmm. run out of breath trying to mm-hmm. See the real thing. And the power of this exhibition is precisely that you let the pieces live. You even revive some of them.
Uh-huh.
You give new life to some of them through some very wonderful humor.
Mm-hmm.
particularly your pre-modern pieces.
Pre-modern pieces is very interesting. There's not so many the collector in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So the price-wise, you know, sometimes the collector's, you know, policy that the older is better, or sometimes older get more expensive. But mm-hmm. in contrast, archaeological material is quite cheap.
Huh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's amazingly cheap sometimes.
Yes. That's interesting. Is it relatively accessible? Is it easy to find?
No, it's not easy to find. But when it comes up to the market, it's mm-hmm. it's not that expensive at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, compared to the tea ceremony utensils,
mm-hmm.
or what this 12th century Japanese painting, that's most desirable to me. But it's very expensive.
We've been joking about a mm-hmm. painting for years here in the Freer.
Mm-hmm.
A mandala painting from the Heian period.
Right.
What's your attraction to this piece, if you could describe it?
Well, the first style of Japanese painting, the Yamato-e style, it's the Buddhist painting, but it's so different from Chinese Song Dynasty painting. It's really Japanized in this time, and it's just that the detail is so well painted with some kirigane in there.
Cut gold, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a much softer approach than the Chinese.
Yes, yeah. Right. So the similar kind of effect that Genji Monogatari scroll of the 12th century Japanese, you know, it's finally Japanese stylized their own, Japanese found their own style of painting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the charm of it. That just tickled my stomach.
That gets back to what you were describing before, that your fascination or fixation is looking right at that changing point,
mm-hmm.
when
yes.
whatever from the outside
mm-hmm.
changes a bit
right.
to Japanese.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of find this condition, the very, very good condition from Heian period painting. The colors still remaining very fresh.
Hmm.
This is definitely national treasure, if it were in Japan.
Were it in Japan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
There are a number of pieces in our collection,
yes,
I think, that would rank very high. We're very fortunate to
mm-hmm.
have had Mr. Freer to bring many
mm-hmm.
of them to us.
Right. In the United States, yes. The Gokeimonja I have it in my show was recently founded in the United States. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh. And it came as a framed. So I reframed it as a traditional Japanese style mounting. Mm-hmm. And then I restored it even. I used one similar time, 13th century monk painting, and I cut it down to much patching up the missing silk. So this is a creation of the two painting combined to save my monji bosatsu. This is.
So you do a lot of this work yourself, or?
Yes, especially the mounting design became my profession. So mm-hmm. I have my most of the painting. It's been remounted by myself with this particularly. It's kind of different. It's a very special sense. I think I created. So it's a very unique way of mounting.
That's a whole different direction in conversation, and mm-hmm. maybe in the next time we speak, we can talk about it. But mm-hmm. one of the things that's easy to miss for the untrained eye in looking mm-hmm. at your exhibition is how technically adept you are, mm-hmm. and not simply in photography, but mm-hmm. in the manipulation and recreation of materials. Mm-hmm. You're a Renaissance man in terms of dealing with materials and vision. Uh-huh. You're working now. You have wax figures.
I have wax figures being portrayed like 16th century, as if I was a 16th century photographer.
I see.
The King Henry VIII portrait painted by Holbein, originally recreated based on the painting, and the wax figure was made by the craftsman of Madame Tussaud. And then I studied painting very carefully, so trying to make it look like a 16th century Holbein painting, mm-hmm. again, as a photography. So there's many different layers again. So I'm very crafted people, a person.
No question.
So maybe I'm the last black and white photographer based on the 19th century technique. Now everything is world is so digitalized, so everybody is using a digital photography, mm-hmm. and the credibility of the photography is ended. You know, you can change the image anything you want, but my way it's traditional. You know, field camera. And then using this 8x10, sometimes 11x14 format negatives. And finally, my supplier, Kodak, announced that they are completely out of black and white materials. So they dropped out from the black and white photography. The Ilford company, which I use, and they are suppliers of my paper, bankrupted about a year ago. So I'm about to force out from this tradition of beautiful silver-oriented black and white photography history. So I'm standing at the last moment of this history of photography.
Is that a melancholy thing for you? Do you feel sad about that?
Well, I feel sad, but at the same time, well, it's time to move to some other mm-hmm. mm-hmm. professions. That's why I'm practicing architecture.
Just very briefly, and I know this is a big order for a few words, but mm-hmm. a typical visitor to our exhibitions mm-hmm. probably has about a half an hour mm-hmm. in a gallery, unless they're totally transfixed and they stay.
Including Hokusai show and all the other
shows. Right. Well, in your show, but what would you like a person mm-hmm. to leave with? What intellectual or emotional?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, not knowing. It doesn't have to be having a knowledge of the history of Japanese art, but it's just some kind of the power of the visions. You know, there's some kind of early. It doesn't even have to be a religion. It's just some kind of a spiritual mentality. So the visions is strong enough to attach with this object. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the spirituality is so simple words to name, I think. But the same as with contemporary art you're looking at, and some good art always has its it's radiation of the power, mm-hmm. or aura of the power. Mm. So if the people can feel about it, you know, the way I feel, my collections, and then if we can share about it, then I am very happy.
I think that's a perfect goal. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
It's my pleasure.